Welcome to The Week Ahead in Russia, RFERL's Monday podcast about significant developments and upcoming events in Moscow and beyond. I'm Steve Gutterman, and my guest this week is RFERL senior correspondent Merhat Sharibzhan. Welcome, Merhat. It's good to have you on the show again.
Oh, thank you for inviting me today.
All right. Well, this week, I want to talk a bit about the elections in Moldova yesterday and what they might mean for Russia, and also about the fourth anniversary of Boris Nemtsov's killing. Let's talk about Nemtsov first. He was shot dead near the Kremlin on February 27th, 2015, so it'll be 4 years on Wednesday. There were big marches in Nemtsov's memory in Moscow and several other cities yesterday on Sunday. And apparently turnout in Moscow was over 10,000, and people involved are saying it was definitely bigger than last year. I mean, obviously 10,000 is not a gigantic number. The Bolotnaya protests in 2011, 2012, in which Nemtsov took part, of course, he was speaking and leading chants and everything, drew tens of thousands of people at times. But I think the size is somewhat significant. I think it's part of a trend or kind of a reflection of some people's dissatisfaction with the government. I mean, some of the leaders, were saying this is, it's obviously a protest or a march, for Nemtsov and in his memory, but also a protest against the government. And, there are protests about various issues, some narrow, applying to just a neighborhood or something like a garbage dump or a road being built. And others in Russia are reflecting broader dissatisfaction or anger at the authorities. So obviously, in this case, in part, what the marchers were calling for was justice, meaning a real investigation to determine who may have been behind Nemtsov's killing and the prosecution of that person or those people if they're revealed. Merhat, do you think there's a chance of that happening, actually?
Well, yes. It looks like the posters used by the protesters or held by protesters were about everything. Ukraine, there are many Ukrainian flags even. There were posters saying freedom to Crimean Tatars. This is not only about Nemtsov. This is a reflection of the kind of a protest aura right now across Russia. It's very hard to say that the prosecution will find out for sure who killed Nemtsov exactly, because those five people who were sentenced, it's not clear if they really carried out the execution-style killing. But I don't think that this the investigation of Nemtsov's killing will find who ordered exactly the killing, but in terms of the indication of the dissatisfaction of the policies by Kremlin, by the Kremlin, this event was very significant. There are more people with different posters. If Bolotnaya protest was about one mainly, and the only thing was the dissatisfaction of Putin's new term in the presidential office after Medvedev was a president. So in this case here, there are different kind of challenges faced by Kremlin can be seen, and it's kind of a reflection of common dissatisfaction with the Kremlin's policies.
Yeah, I mean, I think I agree. First of all, I agree. I think the chances of in the next 5 or 10 years, or 5 years at least, the Russian authorities coming up with a statement or a prosecution or a trial of anyone believed to actually be behind Nemtsov's killing is highly unlikely. But I also agree, I think, as you're saying, that these protests or these marches, I think Nemtsov, Nemtsov is kind of a symbol, at this point, in some ways, he's a symbol. I mean, he was at the protests in 2011, 2012, the Bolotnaya protests. And as you said, those were about somewhat, more narrow. Putin's return, fraud in the or suspected fraud in the elections. And I think, you know, now it's sort of like, okay, Putin returned then, and now he's returned again, and he's back, and it's still the first year of his 6-year term. So I think, you know, in some cases, these protests, which are about more narrow issues, are also reflecting a general kind of feeling of, well, you know, we're still going with the same leader, and you know, we're not that happy. I mean, and that's reflected also in some of the polls that we've been seeing with the trust, and particularly the one recently about that suggested more people believe Russia's on the wrong track than on the right track. And I think that was the first since 2006 or something. So yeah, absolutely. Let's move on to Moldova, about the parliamentary elections yesterday. The background there, or part of it, is that the socialists, formerly led by the now president Igor Dodon, are more pro-Moscow, while the ruling Democratic Party is more pro-Western, but less so than the ACUM coalition, which wants closer ties with the EU and says it wants to root out corruption. Now, there's some other background, or there's a lot, actually, but some is that two leading ACUM members alleged shortly before the election that they had been poisoned. And then also Russian authorities, only 2 days before the vote, announced that they're investigating an alleged money laundering scheme they said they suspected was organized by the Democratic Party leader and another person. So, you know, some politicians in Moldova say that that second one, the Russian investigation, is a clear sign of Moscow's meddling in the election on behalf of the socialists. And Dodon certainly is a fan of Putin. He's praised him quite a bit and called for a strategic partnership with Moscow. And he visited in December. So, you know, Merhaba, what do you think? Do you think Russia has a keen interest in the elections in Moldova and had an interest?
Yes, of course, Russia has interest in elections in Moldova, not only Moldova, but in all the former Soviet republics. One example, before Dodon became a president, the president of Moldova, Russia was already meddling into the affairs of that country. The same formula they used and have been using for so many years in Nagorno-Karabakh, in Azerbaijan, in Armenia, Abkhazia and South Ossetia in Georgia, Crimea and Donbass, Donetsk and Luhansk regions in Ukraine. There was in Moldova is Gagauzia, the small autonomous region with a regionally Turkic-speaking population, which was openly receiving financial, moral, and other supports from Russia, and saying that we will secede from Moldova if it joins Romania or it joins NATO or all those things. Russia doesn't want to let this, especially Western former Soviet republics, which are closer geographically to Europe, to get out of Moscow's sphere of interest or control.
Right.
So that's why Russia will do everything to interfere into elections and to make sure that socialist, Moscow-friendly groups will win.
Well, it looks like in this case it's a little bit unclear the results coming in. It appears the socialists may have more seats in parliament, 101-seat parliament, than the Democrats, or certainly more than the ACUM. But they definitely will not have a majority. So there's going to be talks, negotiations to form a coalition and form a government. But if that does not happen, then new elections have to be called, and that could happen within about 2 months. So, you know, it sounds like it's a pretty good result for the Kremlin, and I guess a mixed result, but still, you know, they may not have a staunch ally actually heading a government. But I've seen some observers saying this is the kind of uncertainty that also is potentially playing into Russia's hands. I mean, obviously, it slows movement, any movement toward the EU. And, you know, I think it allows for Russia to keep seeking influence. You know, I'm also intrigued by what's been going on recently with Russia and Belarus. another sort of arm of, you know, another obviously former Soviet republic. Lukashenko was in Sochi for 3 days recently, visiting with Putin. And at one point, he seemed to say that he would be ready for Belarus to integrate with Russia, but only if that's what the people wanted. Now, most Belarusians do not want that. But it was still a striking thing for him to say, because he's often also talking about, you know, sovereignty and how we'll fight for the last, you know, we won't give up an inch of land. You know, Merhab, what do you think? Is Lukashenko up to his usual games, kind of balancing between East and West, or is something changing in that relationship?
Well, he's continuing to balance, but it looks like he's under big pressure. The rhetorics are the same, of course. Just one day before the 23rd of February, which used to be marked in the Soviet Union the day of the Soviet army, and now in Belarus it is marked as the day of the defender of the fatherland, he met with the cadets, with the students of the military school in Minsk, where he said that, again, he said, we are with Russia, and on the same time he said, we are ready to cooperate with anyone, any military group, including NATO, on the condition. And again, this is, I think, the address, his addition is addressed to both Russia and NATO. He says, on condition that we'll be equal in this partnership. So it's clearly sending a message to Russia as well and to NATO as well. So he's balancing, but it looks like he's under more and more pressure because he's talking about it more often. And again, I think it was the first time this year when before this military date or the holiday, so-called,
right.
He met with students of a military school and to had an opportunity or a platform to express this attitude again.
Yeah, that's interesting. And of course, behind this whole thing is the kind of speculation, I guess, at this point that, you know, that Putin, one of the ways Putin could remain kind of in power or at least with great influence once he stops being president is to be the leader or, you know, a big leader of the union between Belarus, union state between Belarus and Russia. So, you know, that's kind of an interesting background. So we'll have to watch that. Now, another thing to watch this week is there's a hearing, an appeal for Michael Calvi and his colleagues, Baring Vostok. He's the U.S. American investor in Russia who's now jailed on large-scale fraud charges that he denies. He'll be appealing against his pretrial detention or jail term. I believe it is on Wednesday. And meanwhile, Baring Vostok has issued an open letter on their website, an open letter to Putin, asking Putin to take personal control of the investigation. They're saying that you know, they want that because it would help provide you know, make it fair and open. And also pointing out that, you know, as Putin has called for, and that in some cases the authorities in Russia have been jailing people for economic crimes, you know, in pretrial detention less than they used to. So the company's pointing out, well, essentially asking why is Calvi and why are his colleagues in jail when Putin is calling for the opposite. So that'll obviously be something to watch in terms of how the Kremlin treats it and what the courts say. Okay, well, let's wrap it up for today. I'll be back with a guest next Monday. Meanwhile, please keep an eye out on Friday for The Week in Russia, my newsletter about recent events and what they might mean going forward.